This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. This afternoon, a conversation about dance. We talk with choreographer Susan Marshall and Patricia Knowles, head of the Department of Dance at the University of Illinois. Marshall's dance to mark the millennium, The Descent Beckons, will be performed Saturday evening at Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. The Descent Beckons is a work co-commissioned by the National Dance Project, the Joyce Theater, Krannert Center, the University of Nebraska, and the University of Iowa. In program notes from Krannert, Susan Marshall describes the dance as a collaboration between dance and light, which takes the traditions of winter solstice rituals as its source of inspiration. She further explains, "The Descent Beckons will contemplate the completion of the 20th century, lamenting losses, brutality, and good intentions never realized, seeking to put that time to rest, and finally turning to a new era with a sense of hope and possibility." Since 1983, Susan Marshall's dance company has performed more than 25 works that she has created. Audiences in Champaign-Urbana last enjoyed a performance of the company in January of 1992. Listeners, I hope you'll join our discussion this afternoon with your questions. Here are the telephone numbers. In Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. And toll-free 1-800-222-9455. 1-800-222-WILL. Susan Marshall, welcome to the Afternoon Magazine. Patricia Knowles, welcome back to the Afternoon Magazine.
Thank you.
Nice to have both of you here with us this afternoon. Susan, as I understand it, The Descent Beckons is the first line from a poem titled The Descent by William Carlos Williams. Was the poem inspiration for the dance?
The poem is inspirational. I don't think it has a direct connection to the dance, except in the fact that it deals with descent and memory and cycles. And those are elements that are part of the work. The title preceded the work. I should say that the work has become an awfully good time, and the title Descent may not imply that, but it's become something of a raucous show since its conception.
Yeah. So there are some dark themes here, but there's also a bit of cabaret and vaudeville involved.
Yes. The key inspiration for the work came from studying New Year's rituals and what is involved in those rituals around the world and over time. And it turns out that almost any New Year's ceremony has in it some component of purging a community of its demons, some sort of purge. And that's done through a number of different ways. A lot of noise making is one way that's often done, or the assignation and choosing of a scapegoat who would possibly be run out of town after the community sins have been attached to that person, or burning an effigy. So these are some of the things that came up. But also there's the creation of chaos, sort of back to the primordial chaos out of which we will then reestablish a new order. But first, the chaos, and in that chaos there's a mix-up of all sorts of things, social taboos are lifted and you can interact with whomever you want, that sense of licentiousness.
The lights go off. And
yeah, all that kind of good fun.
Yeah. Well, what is the relationship? Talk with us some more about what the relationship between the poem and the dance. I mean, there must be some connection, or how did that maybe lead you in the direction that you took with this?
I think, the creation of a work is a long and convoluted process that involves a lot of different minds and begins at one point and arrives at another. And at the beginning point of the work, the first thing that intrigued me was the cyclical aspect of light and the descent into darkness and an ascent into light that happens every year. And that was really the time at which the title came to me, and I was a fan of the poem, and I knew the poem in some ways dealt with death, which is, of course, the biggest cycle of all, and death and rebirth. And that was the key place in which the poem played a role. Mm-hmm. And then the work moved on its own path after that.
mm-hmm. I think it's interesting that poetry played a little mm-hmm. role here in the creative process of moving you quite literally.
Mm-hmm.
Movement we speak of being moved by poetry.
Yeah.
But that's quite literally the case for a dancer choreographer. Is poetry often an inspiration for work, Patricia? What do choreographers, dancers draw on for inspiration?
Oh gosh, I think the sources are endless. But what comes to mind is Martha Graham's Letter to the World, which was inspired and utilized Emily Dickinson's poetry. There was She Who Dances and She Who Speaks. There were two characters that were both were two manifestations of Emily Dickinson, the external and the introspective internal. And the poems were read during the piece. I think Bill T. Jones recently did a piece to Dylan Thomas's poem, one of Dylan Thomas's poems. Poetry is used a lot. And also Martha titled one of her dances Acts of Light, which comes from Emily Dickinson's poetry.
You have seen this dance, the
Letter to the World?
No, The Descent Beckons.
Oh, well, Susan has not divulged the total dance, but she has shown us little sections in a wonderful lecture demonstration 2 days ago and talked about the context for creating these sections, and I think I think the audience would like to hear how she creates her movement, because it is a wonderful collaborative process.
That's interesting. I'm glad you mentioned that, because I think in the program, credit for choreography goes not only to you, Susan, but mm-hmm. to the company. Talk with us about the process of mm-hmm. of collaboration.
Well, you spoke a moment ago about inspiration. You know, my greatest source of inspiration is actually the dancers and what we're able to come up with together in the studio. And with any work, there's usually just a springboard of an idea, which I've already told you. You know, working with something, that was what the dealing with New Year's rituals was basically the springboard. And then we went into the studio and started creating movement. More and more I have found that the most rewarding material comes from the least specific directions for creation that I would give the dancers. So I'll give them a very light structure for improvisation and let them work and try to create anything. We have no idea. We don't place any expectations on it as to what it might be. They create something. We look at it, discuss what it has, what its values are, and then if we like it, we put it on the bookshelf and keep it, and we start to accumulate a lot of vocabulary for this dance piece. And out of that, dance begins to lift. The ideas that keep surfacing and that are appropriate for the themes that we might be working with begin to emerge, and an identity for the work begins to emerge.
Could you give us an example of a direction you would give the dancers and what mm-hmm. they might do with it?
There in the work prior to this, there was an amazing example of that. I asked two dancers, I asked a lot of people to come up, couples to work with a directive, which was vacillate between two points while advancing towards a third. Mm-hmm. It was very strange. They all had it was because it was based off another movement that we had, that's how we had analyzed what was happening in it. And so we said, okay, go ahead and work with that idea. And out of that, a number of things happened, one of which was this gorgeous, sensual, loving duet where these two people were simply tangled in each other's arms and moving slowly from position to position. We called it eternity. And it ended up in this piece simply exactly as it had been created by those two people, basically. And I sometimes find that giving a very abstract direction like that, you can be open to whatever happens. Whereas if I said, go create a sensual duet, something very corny would likely to occur.
That's interesting. Patricia is nodding her head. Anything you'd like to add?
Well, I mean, it just keeps it into, that's the way to abstract. It's a wonderful way of abstracting movement and not having something literal, so that when you're looking at it, it takes you to different places other than being locked into one literal idea, too.
Mm. Yes, it's something about the way the creative process works, in that if you're working from your mind and only your mind, well, you're limited right there, as you can only come up with what you can imagine in your head. And you can imagine that sitting, you know, a choreographer sitting by themselves imagining, there's a limit to how much you can think out in advance. You don't know until you get out there and just try what's possible with all those arms and legs. So that's one thing. But then if you're trying to get at an idea, if you're trying to force people to fulfill an image in your mind, it's also very limiting. If you just let them come up with something, something much more unexpected and surprising is likely to occur, and then you can talk about what it is.
Yeah. Well, how do you select dancers for your company? And do you... It's got to be important that you are on a similar creative wavelength.
Yes, absolutely. As my process has become more collaborative, my process for bringing dancers into the company has become a little bit more involved. And it used to be just an audition, and I realized the weaknesses of that approach as the years went on. And now there's something that's much more like an apprenticeship, sort of a paid apprenticeship, where people work with the company for a short period of time, and we work creatively together, and we just see if our creative instincts work well together.
Mm. Now, once a movement is incorporated and you find something that you and the dancers really mm-hmm. love, mm-hmm. Is it going to stay the same, or can it change over time? And once a piece is performed, once a work is performed, does it change? Does it ever change?
Yes, especially a work of this size. This work has had one performance prior to coming here, and we are actively working on changing, you know, aspects of the show for this performance. I think, you know, in theater companies, they have something called previews, where they bring an audience into the work and they keep working on it until they're ready to allow the critics in. Well, we don't have that sort of luxury in dance because we're not sitting in a theater for weeks on end. But in a way, that's what happens when a work premieres, is we are going to continue to see what it is. You don't know what it is until an audience is there. Somehow, until all the pieces are there and the audience reacts to it, and that is the final element to come into play, then you see what you have, really.
What did you learn from the audience the first time it was performed?
It was such a relief. The audience completely lost control and were laughing hysterically from the show's opening moments, which we had hoped were going to be entertaining. We didn't. It was just great to find out how entertaining everyone found it. I should say at this moment that the work involves also 100 inflatable dolls, which is something that we've become immune to. We just look at them as extra bodies on stage, which are extra forms for us to work with. But from the moment people saw the dolls, they were so entertained. And I think the dolls almost became the center of the show emotionally, which surprised me. Hmm. And that's one of the things I'm addressing here.
Yeah. These dolls, I'm imagining that they are balloon-like.
Well...
Is that...
No, I'm sure you've seen them. They're the dummies that you can buy in novelty stores. They're just completely in human form. Uh-huh. All the women are alike. All the men are alike. They're all pink, and you know, they're like giant Barbie dolls, just filled with airs. You know, Ken and Barbie kind of.
And what happens to these dolls?
Well, it took us a while to find out what their natural talents as dancers were. At first, we were trying to use them in ways that our bodies work, which was really silly because their bodies are stiff. They have one shape. And so we found that that's how they're used best, when they're just manipulated in that one shape doing what they do. So they, let's see, what do I say? Well, you'll have to see. They really expand the capacity of the bodies to fill the stage area. They can reach a lot of high elevations. They can fly.
Well, that's what I was thinking about, you know, in terms of the balloon idea.
Yeah.
Is that that would be, in my imagination, one way in which they would move.
Yeah, they're much easier to lift than people.
You can...
We saw a little bit of a segment with them, with the dolls. There weren't 100 of them.
No.
But it... They zoom through the space, and they're not, they have much more weight than a balloon. So, I mean, you're really very aware of the vertical space way above where a dancer, you know, when they're flung upward, they give a real energy to the space that a normal floor level standing on the floor doesn't give. So,
how did you decide on 100?
Well, they just sort of kept multiplying. I brought them into the piece first because here we are trying to create this, you know, big work that deals with cycles and end of year, and we're a company of 7 people. So, well, it just didn't seem like we were big enough to do something as momentous as the type of themes we were dealing with in the work. So I thought, well, what do you mean we just need a few more bodies out there? The other way that they play a real significant role is in this whole chaos, as I mentioned, that the New Year's rituals have, is a sense of the dead coming back. And their bodies are inert. They're not life. They have no life. They lie there unmoving. And when you see them in piles, they look like dead bodies. They have a lot of overtones and a lot of images. And I think that's important aspect of the work in that it conjures some of these evils and demons that we need to purge ourselves of. So it helps us remember our past atrocities when you see them lying in piles.
Yeah. What themes, what stories are you drawn to explore to translate into dance?
I'm not sure I understand.
Well, we've been talking about, you know, this is a dance to mark the millennium.
Mm-hmm.
And you're telling a story of cycles, mm-hmm. and of purging, mm-hmm. and
well, actually, this work is a real new path for me in a new direction, and actually very different from the work I've done before. What I feel dance typically deals with very well and have focused on in a lot of my work previous to this is stories that deal with our inner life. Our relations between one another. That's sort of the domain of our physicality. Like when you think of it, if your significant other walks out of the room and doesn't turn and look back at you, no matter what they said before they left, that is going to have a much greater impact on you than whatever their words were. And our lives are ruled by our physical exchanges with people. They're just rife with meaning, whether someone, how they turn and look, what the quality of the embrace was, who broke the embrace first, whether there was just a pat on the back indicating, yeah, this is just a pat on the back, don't think this embrace means anything more than that. You know, all those things we're expert at interpreting, and that's what's in dance. And I feel those sorts of through lines and stories that have to do with our interpersonal lives are really the domain of dance. In this work, I wanted to deal with something different than that, that wasn't about characters and those relationships, but was a little more archetypal and dealt with the things that dance traditionally deals with more, rituals and passages, and to try to see if I could understand that.
Is this work a passage for you as a
choreographer? Yes, it is. And also, I've also broken into new territory that I would normally be afraid to go, somewhat spurred on by my collaborators and I guess by those dolls. But it's very entertaining, and it's also very funny. We have a wonderful guest artist, Lisa Crone, who's an Obie Award-winning actor-playwright from New York. She's very well known for her work also with the 5 Lesbian Brothers, and somehow we managed to get her to be our MC. I don't know if you all are modern dance fans, but the idea of a modern dance show having an MC is a bit of an anomaly right there. But she plays a very important role in the work, and she's very funny.
Talk with us about the idea of using the spoken word now in a dance performance.
Well, all that evolved with this work because we felt that... Still in our initial thinking of what is this New Year ritual or this work we're trying to create, that it should reflect our society as we are now. And how do we celebrate rituals now? Well, we usually watch TV. We watch a big ball come down, or maybe there's, we watch our Emmy Awards and there's, big showbiz numbers. These are the big moments, and a lot of time that's how they're celebrated. And so we thought that a big show aspect with an MC introducing this and, big numbers would, one, be appropriate and fun, and also it would sort of break the traditions of the theater, which would be part of that creating the chaos that we thought that the evening should contain, of creating an awfully good time that's also chaotic.
Mm. What about the idea of, there was a book written a few years ago, Entertaining Ourselves to Death. Politics is entertainment, as much about entertainment as it is about politics. The people who are running for office and who have been elected to office are actors, a wrestler, that kind of thing. Was there any of that?
No, but now that, of course, you've said that, I'm going to go back. I mean, that wasn't part of, at least consciously, something that I was aware of in the initial conception of the piece, but now I'm going to go back and look at it and see if it is there.
Huh, interesting. Going back to your other works that you've created, and the idea of the movement, everyday movement being portrayed in dance, the gestures that we use with one another can be very, very brief and very, while they're huge, they can be very small. For example, leaving a room without turning around to look back. Is that difficult to translate and put on the stage? Because movement has to be, this is my understanding, that movement has to be larger on the stage than it is.
Well, actually that's something that I've sort of taken to task in my work. And I feel that we overlook the power of these small gestures, and they actually read perfectly clearly on stage. That's what we see when we see a theater work. We see that's what we're interpreting all the time. But that in partnership with very athletic and mysterious and powerful movement that has a lot of qualities that we also understand can create a very interesting combination, which is what I like to do. The work is, just because there is pedestrian work and movement involved in it, I don't want to give the impression that you're just going to see a lot of people who look like you out there walking around and looking at each other. This is tremendously athletic work performed by some of the most, incredibly highly trained dancers, who are many of which award winners themselves. And that's used in partnership. And it's sort of almost a style where we allow the people, even though they're doing tremendous things, to look like people, and we downplay their training so that you're not constantly being drawn to the fact that these people are dancers. They are sort of rarefied beings. They come across as being just like you and me.
Mm. So would it be fair to say you want to create a dance that anyone and everyone would find compelling and would enjoy watching?
Absolutely. I feel that I work with a vocabulary that's accessible to any audience.
Susan and the company, Patricia, have been in town, I guess, for about a week. Is that correct?
Well, we've seen them for 2 days. They came in on Tuesday night.
Yeah.
What kinds of things have the students been interested in learning from Susan and the company?
Her working process, a context for the piece that we're going to see, which they did, which brilliantly, in a lecture demonstration program, taking segments of the dance, talking about, asking the audience, eliciting their responses to that, and then going back and showing it again and talking about how it was put together. So just enlightening them as to the process of making the work. One thing Susan was talking about using natural gestures. And we're going to be performing one of her early pieces. Is it 1984?
1984, yeah.
Arms, which I saw here at the Krannert Center in 1992. And also, it was on that Alive from Off-Center program that PBS did years back. It's one of her signature pieces, but it stays in one spot primarily. There's a little movement away, but minimal. And it doesn't use a single stylized movement. I think it's all totally natural gestures to people with a range of emotional connotations, from rejection to tenderness. It's really a brilliant piece. And one of the events in her residency was auditioning dancers yesterday, maybe about 35 of them, to choose the couple that would perform this in our February Concert Festival 2000. Mm-hmm. And she chose four couples, so each one's going to do it a different night, which is great. But it's a very different style from the piece that we're going to see. People who come to both concerts will see an incredible range of Susan's talents there.
Yeah. This piece, Susan, is described as a signature work.
Arms, yeah.
Arms. Why?
Well, it's one of those works that people identify with you and continue to want to see year after year. I remember a good friend, after I did this work, Arms, came up to me and said, "Susan, what are you going to do next? You're just going to have to do this over and over again." You know, it's one of those pieces that's such a breakthrough that you now have to worry about getting beyond your breakthrough and not getting stuck in it, you know. And it's one of those pieces you just don't even know how it came about. You know, I look back at it and I'm still not quite sure how it came into being. You know, was I even there? What role did I play in that? How did that happen, you know?
So the descent beckons another breakthrough, though. Right?
It certainly is a breakthrough, and, you know, it's not until the dust settles that you know, and time has passed, that you really see what it is that you have. But it's certainly a breakthrough in terms of, the whole feel of it. It's, like I said, it's a lot of fun. And not that it doesn't have a lot of serious content that goes along with it. But doing work that was at all that had entertainment as a focus is new for me.
Mm. Going back to the collaborative aspect of dance and choreography, is there room within your work, or do you include within your work room for dancers to improvise within a performance?
You know, that's such an interesting question, and it's something I've always admired and I think the dancers would enjoy. And I've been allowing that in very small segments. Like, I don't want to give too much away about the show, but there's a moment in which things go really wild in the work and the curtain comes screeching down and cuts it off. I'd say there's about 10 seconds in there where the dancers can do whatever they want.
Behind the curtain?
As the curtain's coming down.
As the curtain is coming
down.
But
by and large, there's a lot of improvisation that happens on the way to the work. But once the work is shaped, all the pieces are so important to the whole that I have a hard time finding ways to allow that freedom in the work. I would like to find that, but it's actually all the pieces are, by the time they're performed, well choreographed and set out.
Yeah. If you talk to jazz musicians, though, about improvisation, it's not about no rules, or it's not about letting just anything fly.
Yeah.
It is work within the parameters of whatever the idea, the musical idea or the musical piece is.
No, you're absolutely right. I think the challenge for me is that since my works deal with content, and every movement and how it proceeds in context will play a role on that, I haven't yet discovered how to use, and it would have to be a structured improvisation like that, in a live performance in such a way that it supports the whole. And It just hasn't been my focus, but it is something mm-hmm. that intrigues me.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. My name is Celeste Quinn, and we're talking this afternoon about dance. We have two guests with us. Susan Marshall is with us, also Patricia Knowles. Patricia is head of the Department of Dance at the University of Illinois. Susan Marshall is in Champaign-Urbana with her company, and the dance, her dance, The Descent Beckons, will be performed tomorrow evening at Krannert Center for the Performing Arts at the University of Illinois in Urbana. If you'd like to talk with us this afternoon, if you've got questions or comments, give us a telephone call in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. And toll-free, 1-800-222-9455. 1-800-222-WILL. I know you don't want to give too much away. You just said that a moment or two ago, but I wanted to ask you about working with lighting designers, costumers, music people. There's original music mm-hmm. for the piece. Why don't you talk with us about the process of putting all of these elements together?
The process involves a lot of talking and sharing of ideas and seeing whatever, bringing in materials that are inspiring to the various people. And as usually I get out ahead of the other designers and composer, I ask the composer this time, give me music ahead so I can shape the dance to your music and instead of you having to shape mm-hmm. the music to my dance. And he did, and he supplied me with, I would say, 20-second or minute-long ideas for me to work with, of which we chose a third as being appropriate to the piece. And we started working with those, and then we ran out of music that was right, and then we started pulling off my music library, which was a bad moment for the composer because then he had to start responding to the musics that I was choosing to fill in the blanks. But then back and forth until we arrive, the musics that are sticking that he created, then he expands upon and elaborates, and we arrive at the music for the whole. For this work, we did decide to allow certain tunes that are kind of show busy just to be performed by the original artists in recording instead of trying to make something that would be like that. Mm.
Do you give a composer direction like of the same type that you give dancers?
I think it's slightly different because the language is different. We would talk about the mood a lot. We need something frightening and driving for this sort of, something maybe loud and deafening or growing that has a crescendo. Those would be sort of the words that we would talk about. Sometimes, based off what maybe we were working with in the studio, I might say something that has a rock and roll beat or that has a strong 4/4, we'd have to give him more information related to the specifics that we'd been working with and now we were locked into.
Mm. Maybe you would describe for us something of the music that David Lang mm-hmm. and the lyricist Christopher Rennino. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe? Actually, what happened? The lyrics have drifted out, and we're left with that part is part of the continuing evolution. We decided that the lyrics were actually distracting to the dance, so now we're just back, just the pure music. And the music that David has written covers a wide range. Some of it's just very mysterious and beautiful and soft and almost ephemeral, and some of it is truly frightening and driving, and you feels like has a great sense of some kind of impending action, but you don't know what it is.
Where else will this dance be performed?
From here we continue to Nebraska, to the Lead Center in Nebraska. We'll also be moving out. We'll go to California, Santa Barbara, Glendale, California. We'll be going to the Washington, D.C. area, also Chicago, and we'll come home to New York right before Christmas.
Yeah, we have some listeners in the Chicago area. Actually, do you know about when you're going?
It'll be about in a month's time, something like that, and we'll be at the at Columbia Dance Center, I believe. I wish I had my Yeah. My itinerary in front of me, I'm sorry.
But just a kind of a rough idea so people kind of keep an eye out. Are there differences in audiences from D.C. to Nebraska to Champaign-Urbana, Chicago?
You know, I don't know. We'll just have to find out. I think that the differences in audiences will probably have more to do, less to do with the place and more to do with the differences in audiences you find everywhere, whether you've got the college crowd, whether you, you know, are getting an older audience that is more used to traditional work. It all depends on that. That sort of thing probably plays more of a role than the place. But we'll see how that turns out as we go from place to place.
Where are you from?
Originally, Florida and Pennsylvania, Hershey, Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
But I've been in New York for the past 20 plus years.
New York is your home.
It's home now.
Yeah. What led you to dance and choreography as a career?
Just a continual involvement with movement. I had danced on and off, you know, as a kid, with my mom taking me to various dance schools and then dropping out. Got into high school and got into gymnastics in, you know, just a scholastic level. And then segued into dance, finding that was where I was ending up continually. And then somewhere in high school made a commitment that this is what I want to do and went to Juilliard. Just continued to follow it.
Mm. Work. Are you also working on, you know, future pieces?
Right now, this one is so consuming my attention because I'm still actively very involved with making sure this work reaches its full fruition. That I don't really have much of another time or thought for anything else. There will be another work coming next year, and yet, fortunately, the deadline isn't up in my face as yet, so I'm not being forced to think about it. So I'm just enjoying working on this one right now.
Yeah. I talked with a writer not too long ago, I think it was this week, who talked about being so involved with this huge project that he felt like he was locked in a closet with a Tyrannosaurus Rex. And he said, and part of the horror of it was that outside, all these ideas for other books were lined up like taxi cabs honking, which is that's a wonderful metaphor. But I wonder, you know, what do you do when the muse visits you and you're caught up in a closet with a Tyrannosaurus Rex?
I haven't had a big Tyrannosaurus Rex. I think that's one of the joys of collaborative work is there's a lot of... You don't get, you know, when you have a locked door or something, you're having a hard time wrestling it, you don't have to wrestle it by yourself. So I have the joy of working these problems out with other people, so I don't ever feel quite so desperate, possibly, as someone who works by themselves, you know, wrestling alone with a work would. This is a work that I knew I was going to get to do while I was working on the previous one, and I did have a glimpse of that feeling. But basically, I was just very happy knowing that when I got done with that work, I would have another work to plunge myself into. So, I would say my only Tyrannosaurus Rex aspect about the work is that it is more in competition with my home life. You know, that's the other thing I'm eager to spend more time with.
Yeah, you're a young mom?
Yeah, I'm a young mom, so my son's only 2.5 years, so it's hard to stay away.
Yeah, boy, that would be tough. Yeah. Does he get out into the
touring world?
Yeah, to the touring world.
I think he will, especially, you know, before he's school age, and now he's getting to an age where it would be more possible for him to, you know, to handle road life. And also, once the work is mature and I'm not having to work with it, I mean, I'm in the studio making changes and rehearsing with the dancers, you know, all day long, so that I don't have much free time, so there really wouldn't be much point to it. But I think soon.
Yeah. Working with the students and the Department of Dance, is that like a collaboration between the dancers, yourself and the students? I mean, do you learn things from the students?
Yes, I don't think we've had a chance to spend that much time with each other for the communication to become as two-way as it could be. But certainly teaching, that's what that experience is all about. As you enter into any kind of teaching relationship, I think you often learn as much from the process as your students do.
Mm. You want anything to add, Patricia, in terms of putting students and dancers together? You're so quiet.
Well, just generally, I mean, I think the reason that we can sustain ourselves teaching over long periods of time is because there are some students who really are, that we learn, they're very wise souls, and they're enlightening. I learn a lot from my students, especially in composition classes. They go off and study in the summers at different workshops. They bring back different ideas. I learn a lot from what they have to say to each other about their creative work. I think it would be awful to teach and not be learning from your students all the time. It's one of the exciting things about teaching, the ideas you get.
We have a caller waiting to talk with us. Let's put your headphones on, please, so we can hear the caller. And our caller this afternoon is on the line, on the toll-free line from Charleston. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I wondered if you could talk a little bit. I'm a writer, and I understand writing a stage play, but I really have trouble. As much as I enjoy watching a dance performance, I have trouble understanding how you can, I don't think the word is right, but I don't know what else to use, a dance performance. Would you talk about that a little bit and maybe enlighten me?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the process is a lot like writing, probably. It's just that our medium is movement, and our means to remember it is is repetition. Dancers' memories lie in their bodies, so it's not a matter of writing it on the written word. We, writing it down on the page and there it is. We put it out on their bodies. The bodies repeat it. After a certain number of times, they have it. Now, we also videotape every day. That's what I do. I don't know if every choreographer does that, because this way I can put something on the shelf and retrieve it and still have access to it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes, that does make it a little bit clearer. Thank you very much.
Thanks for your call this afternoon. What was there anything in particular in this piece that you'd say this was the greatest pleasure of it for me?
Oh, I don't know. This whole process has been tremendously entertaining. Of course, everything that Lisa was involved with was absolutely hysterical. I'll try to think of some. Oh my goodness, there's so many fun moments. I don't want to give you the impression that we don't work hard for a living, but making this piece was an absolute blast.
Well, I think you've probably hooked a lot of folks in the audience this afternoon, and we'll see you on Saturday evening. As we've been talking a little bit about this dance to mark the millennium, I think I must ask, what are you doing on New Year's Eve?
You first?
I don't know. No plans.
I think I'll be hiding in the country with a few friends.
Yeah. I want to thank the both of you for coming in and talking with us this afternoon very much. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you.
Our guests this afternoon, Susan Marshall and Patricia Knowles.